Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Concentration camps in Wyoming, death panels, a one-world government taking over your life, the end of the world. It's all upon us if you live in Glenn Beck's world. And millions do. Can't be sure, says Beck, but I can't debunk it. I'm just saying, says Beck, as he talks about new Nazis and evil and Armageddon. But just saying has made Beck millions, and with his just saying, he's helped change the American political landscape. This hour on Point, the Glenn Beck phenomenon. You can join the conversation. Do you listen to Glenn Beck's radio show, watch his TV show? Is he your nightmare or the one guy in America looking out for you? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We're going to hear a number of voices in this hour, but a big one with us right now from Washington, Dana Milbank is here, syndicated columnist for The Washington Post, author of the new book, Tears of a Clown, Glenn Beck and the Teabagging of America. Dana, welcome to On Point.
It's a great pleasure to be with you, Tom.
Let's just listen for a minute. This is Glenn Beck at the Restoring Honor Rally. Everybody saw it on TV anyway last August on the Mall in Washington on the anniversary at the location of Martin Luther King's 1963 I Have a Dream speech. Beck defended himself, and I know you know this, Dana, but here you go. Against charges that he's a demagogue.
I know that many in this country think that I'm a fearmonger. It is not a label that I think applies. I do talk about frightening things, but I don't think the man who saw the iceberg as the Titanic was about to hit it and said, "It's an iceberg," was a fearmonger. He was warning the people on the ship.
He's not a fearmonger, says Glenn Beck. Here's March 3rd this year. Glenn Beck on Fox News morning show Fox and Friends claiming that under the Obama administration, FEMA was setting up a U.S. Department of concentration camps.
We are a country that is headed towards socialism, totalitarianism, beyond your wildest imagination. I have to tell you, I'm doing a story tonight that I wanted to debunk these FEMA camps. I'm tired of hearing. You know about them?
Sure.
I'm tired of hearing. I wanted to debunk them. Well, we've now for several days done research on them. I can't debunk them.
He's not a fearmonger. Dana Milbank, what is Glenn Beck?
I love that the notion that he came in there and said, "I'm not a fearmonger," and then said, "We're the Titanic and we're going down." So I don't know exactly what you call that, but I mean, no less an authority than Shepard Smith, who is on Fox News right around the same time as Glenn Beck, has said his show is the fear chamber, and he's talked about the apocalypse coming and people fending others off with guns and hiding in their basement, putting their valuables in safes. The people, even advertising on a show, there's one company that actually sells seed banks so that when the apocalypse comes, you can take out these seeds and plant them in your backyard and you will be able to survive, presumably as long as you're able to shoot off all your neighbors.
We're looking for your bottom line here, Dana, but take us through, sort of map this a little bit for us, if you will, because we'll have listeners who listen to Glenn Beck plenty and many others, I can imagine, who maybe have never watched a full show of Glenn Beck. What are his themes? What are his constant points of reference? And what is it about Woodrow Wilson, Nazism, and Armageddon that so got his attention?
Well, this is why I wrote the book, Tom, and that is that everybody knows that Glenn Beck is this cultural phenomenon, that he's able to bring hundreds of thousands of people to the Mall in Washington, that he's the de facto leader of the Tea Party. But his viewership is huge by cable news standards, you know, maybe 2 million, as many as 3 million a day. But in a country of 310 million, that's not that many. So I tried to make this sort of the Cliff's Notes to Glenn Beck to really understand it. The first thing you have to understand is the man is an absolutely brilliant entertainer. Love him or hate him, he is absolutely brilliant. The guy, you know, he wraps fish on his show. He dances in lederhosen. He's, you know, boiled a plastic frog. There are the famous tears occasionally elicited by applying a Vicks under the eye. And he is also absolutely brilliant at opportunistically seeing where the country is going. These are bad economic times. Bad economic times lend themselves to anger and to fear. He has captured that in a way that nobody else has, and he's done it by bringing things into the mainstream that others won't. Bill O'Reilly on Fox News said to Beck, "You take things, you know, five steps further than I do," and that's, you know, you played the clip of the FEMA concentration camp. So he's able to bring some of the most extreme things off the web and put it into the mainstream. That's why he has this enormously passionate group of followers.
We kind of want to figure out the schematic here. Here's Glenn Beck comparing the president's plans to those, one way or another, of Adolf Hitler in Nazi Germany.
I am not comparing him to this, but please read Mein Kampf for this reason. If you read it now, you see that Hitler told you what he was going to do. He told the Germans.
And if it's not true, he's got a red phone in the studio. Why doesn't the White House call him? He says, call him. Here he is, I don't know. Listen.
But they won't challenge. They won't call me. Communists, revolutionaries, socialists, Marxists, followers of Chairman Mao, appointed by Obama to the executive branch in positions of the government. Call. Call me. Explain it. Explain it any other way. Call me. Right now. Call me. The phone will ring right now. Call me. We set up a phone line to the White House. They could call and correct any falsehood. Call me.
Call me. He is an entertainer. March us through the schema here, Dana. How do these things fit together? I mean, Woodrow Wilson, of all things, what's up with that? Who even thinks about Woodrow Wilson?
Well, right. And Glenn Beck is sort of sees himself as a school teacher with that famous blackboard. And he's, you know, sort of brought in historians, somewhat fringe historians, but who have portrayed an alternative view of American history, where the founders were not deists, but were, in fact, devout fundamentalist Christians. He takes us through the progressive era. That's why he hates Woodrow Wilson.
Why?
Liberals call themselves progressives mm-hmm. today as well. Mm-hmm. He says that Woodrow Wilson was the beginning of progressivism. That was, of course, the progressive era, you know, cleaning up meatpacking plants and stuff.
Sure.
But,
ending child labor that hardly sounds
exactly.
like hell on earth.
But progressivism to Glenn Beck, he says Woodrow Wilson started eugenics, which led to the Nazi Holocaust. So
I
he sees
don't
this
get
unbroken
that.
Chain from Wilson to Hitler to Obama. And he says that progressivism is the root of both communism and fascism. So very conveniently, it is all the ills of the 20th century had their origins in that progressive movement, which he conflates with the, you know, current liberals who are, for lack of a better word, you know, liberals became a dirty word. So they sort of named themselves or renamed themselves progressive. So he's tying that back to the beginning of that movement.
I'm not buying his history, but help us explain how he describes. I don't get the eugenics connection to Woodrow Wilson. You know, how does he go from Woodrow Wilson and progressivism ending child labor in filthy meat plants to the Holocaust?
Well, it's all very obscure bits of history, and you know, this is what the Beck Show is about. He has Founders Fridays to talk about to sort of re-engineer the history of the founding of the Republic. He's created Beck University online, and he's brought in academics to do this. The viewers have to have a significant attention span. He'll go through this. A monologue could last a half an hour, and then he'll have guests to reinforce it further. So he will find, you know, take eugenics as an example. He will find that somebody that worked with Woodrow Wilson was suggesting something involving eugenics. So you take off on that a tangent, and then you can sort of draw some dotted line. Obviously, if you associate hold a person responsible for everybody who is ever associated with that person, you get into you can obviously come up with, you know, various degrees of separation and come up with any sort of theory. But that's the practice. Then what Beck said, you know, with the hotline is that I've made this allegation. If they're not denying it, it therefore must be true. That's sort of what I did in my book as well. I said, okay, here are my allegations. Is Beck going to come out here and deny them? People have had some fun with that. There was an internet hoax, a falsehood, of course, that said you know, Glenn Beck raped and murdered a young girl in 1990. And the whole joke was that because he didn't deny it, it therefore must be true. But he actually got it shut down by appealing to a court that operates through the United Nations, which Beck is no fan of, but he was able to get
that shut. So what are your allegations, Dana, then?
Well, my allegations are that, well, first of all, I accept that he is an absolutely brilliant entertainer, a brilliant opportunist. He is essentially the first real demagogue of the cable news and the internet era. He is a Father Coughlin of our times. And I think that while many of his followers are good and decent people, he has enabled and empowered a violent fringe in America, and that is a dangerous and disturbing thing.
Evidence of the violence?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of cases we can go into if you like. There was the killing of four policemen in Pittsburgh by a guy who had just posted Glenn Beck's statements about the FEMA concentration camps that you had alluded to there. Just posted that on a neo-Nazi site, and then went through this violent episode. There was a guy who just went to. Wound up shooting at some cops out in Oakland, California. It turns out he was on his way to blow up the Tides Foundation and the ACLU. The Tides Foundation is something that Beck virtually single-handedly has been taking apart as an organ of George Soros. This guy has since described how he was influenced in his thinking on Soros and others by Glenn Beck and the use of that blackboard. So, I'm not saying Glenn Beck is responsible for these guys, shooting and killing cops. But what I am saying is that he has given a platform to their conspiracies that has taken something from the fringe in America and put it front and center. And that in itself is a dangerous thing.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Glenn Beck phenomenon, what it means, where it's headed. Dana Milbank is here. His new book is Tears of a Clown, Glenn Beck and the Teabagging of America. We should say he is not the only voice out there. He had a big rally on the National Mall in Washington. Just this last weekend, there was another one. Here's MSNBC at the other end of the spectrum host, or I don't know if it's comparable. Anyway, Ed Schultz at the One Nation Working Together rally at the Lincoln Memorial. This is just this past weekend, a rally in response to the Tea Party movement, maybe in response a bit to Glenn Beck's Restoring Honor rally held at the same site just a month earlier.
One Nation! We are together! This march is about the power to the people! It is about the people standing up to the corporations! Are you ready to fight back? Are you ready to stand up for your brother and sister? This is a defining moment in America!
We are one nation together, said Ed Schultz, but that's not the message necessarily from Mr. Beck. Here's a little bit of tape leading up to the 2008 elections. Glenn Beck sat down with author Joel Rosenberg to discuss a possible end of days.
Hillary Clinton says she will retaliate with force against Iran if they attack Israel. Then Russian President Vladimir Putin embraces one religion. Jimmy Carter meets with Hamas to forge Middle East peace.
If there is success between Abu Mazen and Prime Minister of Israel.
Could these current world events be signs that we're closer to the end of days? Author Joel Rosenberg, hailed as a modern Nostradamus, has a new book out. It's called Dead Heat. It takes you inside a presidential race and asks, what role, if any, does the U.S. play in the last days? It may be fiction, but tonight it'll seem a little more real.
A little more real. Dana Milbank, what is it with the end of days stuff? There was Joel Rosenberg's book, but Glenn Beck clearly kind of eating it up, and it's hardly the only time he talks about this. It's a pretty persistent thread. What's the end of days? What's the root of that kind of thinking and talk?
Yes, there are references to it very regularly, and if anything, that that this is before the election, he was still with. CNN, and if anything, he's stepped it up a significant degree since going to Fox. Beck has a very interesting relationship with the religious right. Of course, he's a Mormon. The evangelical Protestants don't entirely trust Mormons, to say the least. I've documented cases in which he is speaking in sort of a coded language, if you will, to alluding to Mormon prophecies that a Mormon listener would understand, but that the Christians wouldn't necessarily.
Are these main mainstream Mormon prophecies or something else?
Well, for the most part, they are, you know, from the far right of Mormonism as well. The idea that the Constitution would be hanging by a thread and leaders of the Mormon Church will step in to save the nation. So he has made repeated sort of veiled references to that. He's brought in the thinking of Cleon Skousen, who is this sort of a real outlier in extreme Mormon thought as well. But Beck also appeals to sort of the more of the mainstream evangelical Protestants, both with his own story of finding God and recovering from addiction, which is a very compelling and moving tale, but also with end times philosophy, which has a substantial following among the religious right. And he is frequently talking about this. That's what why we get the constant doomsday references, the apocalypse. He is speaking to the religious conservative or some slice of the religious conservative with that talk. Remember, Beck comes from sort of the libertarian conservatism. We start back a dozen years ago. He was for abortion rights and was wearing a ponytail. So he came into politics and conservatism through the libertarian door. And that's still the bulk of his following, the anti-government, less taxes, you know, shrink the whole thing. Because there is obviously another wing to the conservative movement, he appeals to that through both the Mormon side and through the end times theory.
He can get apocalyptic in a hurry. Here's a little tape. This is all the way back in 06, but you get a sense. Apocalyptic, I don't know, for the world or for, in this tape, France, or for one listener to his show. A listener called him when he talked about vaporizing France.
You know what? I'm not even going to tolerate this anymore, Rod, because you obviously, sir, can't get off my phone! You obviously, sir, cannot handle comedy. On comedy, sir, we say things and take them to the extreme. Do I want to vaporize France as much as I want to vaporize you? You're lucky I don't have some sort of equipment where I could vaporize you right now, because I'd be pushing the button over and over and over and over again. Now that, sir, is what I would call comedy. Do I really want to vaporize you? Yes, I do!
Okay, there's Clint Beck. My goodness. Here he is in August at the Restoring Honor Mall in Washington with a different tone.
We must be better than what we've allowed ourselves to become. We must get the poison of hatred out of us. No matter what anyone may say or do, no matter what anyone smears or lies or throws our way or to any American's way, we must look to God and look to love.
Vaporize in a rage, look to love. It's all Glenn Beck. Dana Milbank's new book is Tears of a Clown. Dana, stand by for just a minute. We've got Mark Leibovich with us as well now, Washington correspondent at the New York Times. His piece, Being Glenn Beck, ran in last week's New York Times Sunday magazine. Really good piece. Mark Leibovich, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Describe Glenn Beck in person. You sat down with him in his offices in New York.
Well, he's someone who I was sort of surprised. I mean, you hang around with him a little bit, and he's someone who very much seems to want to be liked. I mean, he's a very sort of supportive, you know, he's the kind of guy that a lot of people feel like they can go up and hug, and actually do hug. And that's sort of a different flavor than you would see of a lot of firebrand types, especially on the right. You know, in person, he's much more subdued, I found. He talked a fair amount about his journey up through addiction and to overcome addiction and stuff, and didn't cry at all, which sort of begged the question of whether the tears are for effect, as Dana alluded to before.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I found him to be a much smaller personality in person, as you often find with people who have very well-honed shticks and very well-honed public personas.
A lot of bodyguards.
I don't think I saw any of them. I mean, maybe they were. At least they didn't make themselves apparent to me. But yeah, no, he's a very. I don't know if paranoid is the right word, but he's certainly very, very conscious of himself as a target. I mean, he has bodyguards that he walks around with at all times. He wears bulletproof vests when he goes out and does a lot of his public events. And you know, he tried to put a big barrier up at his. His mansion in New Canaan, Connecticut, as Dana actually pointed out. So, and I mean, it might not be, he has a young family, and it might not be you know, but
crazy
you know,
to be concerned.
Yeah,
it
might be legitimate. Obviously, I mean, there's a lot of crazy people out there, and they lean in any number of directions. So, anyway, yes, but he's very conscious of that.
Dana saw his bodyguards at a rally he did with Bill O'Reilly in Norfolk, Virginia. They do a number of them with pretty different takes, though. At the end on the world, here was just a few days ago, Fox's Bill O'Reilly on The Daily Show, and he and host Jon Stewart had a little fun at Glenn Beck's expense.
So I wanted to come on the Glenn Beck program with my book, and they wouldn't have us.
They don't know who you are.
I would love to have a conversation with him.
With Glenn Beck?
I would love it.
Nobody can.
We could do like an hour.
No, he's in a sealed room.
No. Is that true?
Nobody can talk to him.
Is he like the bubble boy of Fox News?
They just let him out to do the one. He does the radio, he goes back in the sealed room, they let him off the TV, and then he goes back. He can't see him.
But even
he's like
I know
Elvis
that.
And Howard Hughes, you can't.
He's like Elvis and Howard Hughes. Let's get our listeners in here. Iowa City, Iowa. Jim, you're on the air, Jim.
Hi. Just started out as one comment, but the previous guys have gotten me so upset. First, he is not Father Conklin. I'm a student of history. He is nothing like Father Conklin. I've listened to Father Conklin's broadcast, and they make me throw up.
You mean with the sort of hate and anti-Semitism of Conklin, you don't see that here?
No, I do not.
Mm-hmm. What do you see?
I see him as is the crazy uncle that you start listening to because he turns out to be right more often than you'd really, really like him to be.
What's he essentially right about to you, Jim?
Well, an example. I started watching him back when he was on CNN. I thought it was funny. It was a way to fill up a half hour before the network news came on out of where I live. I started taping him because I wanted to see the whole show. He didn't turn really serious till he moved to Fox. When he started warning about things back in early 2008, I listened. I talked to one of my brother-in-laws about it. I told him the stuff I'd seen on Glenn, stuff I'd researched myself. He made some changes in his investments. Everyone else lost during the crash of 2008, except for my brother-in-law.
But, Jim, when he's talking about Nazism right now, when he's talking about Nazism, Jim, and concentration camps and Armageddon, are you buying that stuff?
I'm buying it as a possible illusion, as a step towards those things. My wife is from Russia, and she hears these things, she reads these things in the news, and she shivers because it is so much like what she grew up under socialism, that we're becoming that. When you have the people who lived and died under socialism, had family members put into the gulags.
But what are you talking? What gulag and what socialism, Jim? I mean, you know, go to the store. You're going to have to buy it with cash. You're going to work. You're going to be hired or fired. I mean, what socialism?
Socialism to me is where the government controls through the law or directly how you run individual businesses.
Jim, I appreciate your call. Dana Milbank responded, Jim. He sees a kind of truth teller in Glenn Beck and. Shivers of socialism all around.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously it depends on, you know, which part of Glenn Beck you're listening to. There was also a Glenn Beck who in late 2008 said the only problem with TARP, the big bailout for the banks, that it wasn't big enough. Then he realized this might present a problem and, came out in a very different position on that we now see. The Father Coughlin comparison, I have a whole chapter on this in the book. And, of course, this was during the 1930s and the lead up to the Second World War. And certainly Beck does not have the same strain of anti-Semitism that Coughlin did, although he has on occasion recommended an anti-Semitic author or two. But I have pulled many clips from Coughlin's speeches, and I've put them side by side with Beck's, and I would defy people reading the book to tell them apart. Obviously you could have many shows on the allegations of socialism. That's sort of the basis of the Tea Party movement that we've been talking and arguing about this last year and a half. Mm-hmm. They see that President Obama as a socialist and yet also at the same time as a fascist.
Mark, lately Glenn Beck has begun to position himself as something more than a rodeo clown, his own words in an earlier self-description. I mean, he's got his college or university, as he calls it. He's at the head of the big rally on the National Mall. Where do you see him headed? Is he looking to be something more than an entertainer, or is this all just good business?
I think the answer is yes and yes. I mean, I think he's somewhat at a crossroads. I mean, he seems very conflicted about whether he wants to be a uniter or a divider, as President Bush might have said. I mean, he seems to be looking for a new act, a next act. But he's very, very conflicted because, I mean, he will do these, you know, quasi-high-minded shows about the founders, and he will have, Martin Luther King's niece on, and he will have a lot of religious, spiritual leaders on. And then the next night, he will be sort of calling the president a communist and invoking Hitler and Nazism and so forth. So, I mean, he really does swing in many, many directions. You can say, I mean, sort of tangibly, that his TV ratings have gone pretty steadily down this year. And, one of the many reasons I think Fox is a lot impatient with him these days is he does seem to be, maybe dabbling in some things that might not be as appealing to the audience that actually initially came to him. So, I mean, it's interesting, though, because the evolution seems to be happening in real time.
You describe his show as what they call calorie-free in the TV business, that is decent ratings but not much on the ad revenue front. Why?
Yeah, empty calories,
empty.
I think, is the industry term. I mean, I think what's happening is there is such a aversion to him now among so many advertisers because, it started as an advertiser boycott, but now there is literally, I think, a list at Fox News headquarters of 296 advertisers who absolutely refuse to have their products advertised on anything that Glenn Beck is appearing on. And that also includes shows like The O'Reilly Factor when Beck is a guest, or Fox and Friends when Beck is a guest. So, yeah, they really have to, I mean, they still make money and their ratings are terrific compared to what they had in that slot a few years ago and certainly compared to what Beck had at Headline News. But he certainly creates a lot of headaches for them, including many related to the bottom line.
And he's drawing in between radio and TV and everything else. His revenue is something, what did I read, $32 million a year?
Dollars a year, yeah. I mean, and the truth is his TV work is one of the lower pieces or the smaller pieces of his pie. I mean, he makes the bulk of his money from his syndicated radio deal and his books, which sell, off the charts. I mean, he's had something like 8 bestsellers, and he gets, obviously a big cut of that. His TV contract is about $2.5 million a year, and his contract ends end of next year. So I think, part of what you're seeing now is him maybe positioning himself to move on to a more sort of standalone venue for television, whether it's syndication or another network. I mean, sort of remains to be seen. But he clearly is seen and sees himself as apart from the rest of the Fox ensemble.
You quote David Frum, or maybe this is you, Dana, the former speechwriter from George Bush, saying, Beck offers a story about the American past for people who are feeling right now very angry and alienated.
That was me. I mean, I think, right. I mean, as Dana said, I mean, Dana said before in the conversation, there is this sense of the people have achieved this secret knowledge. And, I mean, you go to some of these events, and there are people who speak with utter self-assurance, and they describe themselves as historians. And then I remember asking one, okay, oh, you're a historian. I mean, do you teach? Are you teach at a high school or at a college? Have you written books? He goes, oh, no, I just attend Glenn Beck University, which means that, they go online and they watch Glenn Beck and so forth. But, again, though, these are people who have read his books very closely. They have read a lot of the authors that Beck recommends. And feel very versed in sort of the version of American history that Beck espouses.
Glenn Beck sat down with Mark Leibovich, 6'2", and not crying while he was with Mark, but the cameras were not on. He's speaking to a lot of people. Mark Leibovich with the New York Times, thank you very much for your story and for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Glenn Beck phenomenon, what it means, where he's headed. Dana Milbank of The Washington Post is with us. His new book is Tears of a Clown. You want to read about what Glenn Beck says, what he has said? You can find it all, or a whole lot of it anyway, in Dana's new book. We'll hear in just a moment from Matt Continetti at The Weekly Standard. A little more Glenn Beck first. Here he was in May. This is Beck and a co-host poking fun at President Obama's 11-year-old daughter, Malia, asking, as they would have it here, kind of sending her up, cruelly, I'd say, asking her father in their rendition about the Gulf oil spill and more on Beck's radio show. Beck later apologized.
Daddy, I know you petted it on an United date.
Mm-hmm. Big country.
I was wondering, Daddy, if you've plucked that hole yet.
Honey, not yet.
Why not, Daddy? Why, Daddy?
Not time yet, honey. Haven't done enough damage.
Daddy?
Not enough damage yet, honey.
Daddy?
Yeah?
Why do you hate black people so much?
The part white, honey.
Glenn Beck and a co-host sending up the president's 11-year-old daughter. Dana, which one was Beck there? He was the one imitating Malia, I guess.
Yeah, I believe he was the daughter in that case.
He has said he would never go after children, that's off limits, but I guess that went out the window here.
Well, he had said that only days before, in fact, when he was talking about with Sarah Palin about her kids. But he forgot, and to his credit, he came out and apologized. Beck is... I always wonder when he's going to cross the line. Well, he crosses the line with so much frequency that it's almost as if he's inoculated himself to that so that he can get away with something, cross the line, and step back a little bit, whether it's, calling the president a racist or, something such as this. You were discussing where is Glenn Beck going? And if you look at sort of the history of demagoguery, there's one of two directions here. The half-life of the demagogue is fairly short, but either there'll be some spectacular flame out or he'll just sort of fade away. And I think I suspect he will take the fadeaway direction because he's so good at pulling back as opposed to when he has gone too far. But what happens is the economy improves. People say, hey, we're not so angry anymore. The appeal, the visceral appeal of gloom and doom begins to fade. And with that, so will Glenn Beck.
Maybe so. But the last time I saw him, he was standing on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C.
It hasn't faded yet.
Matt Continetti, in just a minute here, a couple calls first. Joe in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Joe, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? Great show. Couple things. The one thing I see about Glenn Beck, I do listen to him sometimes as he was going on. I listen to everybody. And he's self-appreciating. He's willing to admit that he's wrong. Whereas the progressive left, they just never seem to admit they're wrong about anything. And I think people like Glenn Beck's fallibility, and he's fallen down, gotten up again. But one other thing I want to say real quick is, Tom, normally you have people from different sides of the spectrum on your show. And at this point in time, it seems like this is just like a book tour for Dana Milbank. There's nobody on the other side here. It's just bash Glenn Beck, 247. Don't you have anybody you can get on the show that can at least say something other than that he's a Father Coughlin, who's a virulent anti-Semite?
Joe, can you wait 15 seconds? Can you wait 10 seconds?
Yeah.
Okay, then stand by. We'll go do it right here, right now. Thank you. Thank you, Joe, for your call. Joining us from Washington, Matthew Continetti. He's associate editor at the Weekly Standard, sort of a conservative standard bearer in Washington, D.C. He's author of The Persecution of Sarah Palin, How the Elite Media Tried to Bring Down a Rising Star. Matt Continetti, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Our caller, Joe, once a Glenn Beck defender. I don't know where you come down on that score, Matt. I know you write and edit for a quite conservative publication. What do you make of Glenn Beck?
Well, I've criticized Beck in the past. I think he's contributing to an important discussion, which is he's raising questions about the role of the federal government in American life and in American history. And he's actually an educator in many ways. He has a book list. He tells his viewers and listeners to read books to revisit certain questions that we assumed were solved about American history and American government. I think in that sense, he provides a useful function. But what I've criticized him in the past for is I think sometimes he veers too close to conspiracy theory. I think some of the authors that he's recommended are actually that. They're conspiracy theorists. And so I have a problem with Beck on that front. But when you look at something like the rally that he held in on August, which was devoid of politics, which was really a spiritual message, I find it hard to criticize something like that. I thought it was useful and actually maybe contributed to some good.
Dana, after Glenn Beck's rally, where he made some of those kind of appeals Matt's describing, no less than Taylor Branch came out, the great historian of the Civil Rights era, and Martin Luther King, and said, cut Glenn Beck some slack. He might be good for this country. What did you make of that, Dana?
Well, that was a sort of a different face of Beck that we saw there, and I think that was actually motivated in part out of necessity. The rally was financed and arranged by a nonprofit that takes care of the family of wounded or fallen soldiers. So had Beck come out there with the usual shtick and talked politics, that would have put that charity in jeopardy. So by necessity, they went in a different direction. And certainly, I agree. There was, I mean, how could you object with the to the sentiment that was expressed there that day? And you know, people in the aftermath said, you know, is Glenn Beck going to be the new leader of the religious right in America? I think that goes too far. That was a bit of a one off, but certainly can't object to that sort of thing. And you know, in response to the caller, I mean, I think we started off by saying that that Beck is an absolutely brilliant entertainer. So I certainly understand why he has his following.
Right. Lots of demagogues have had followings. I guess the question is where you put Glenn Beck, you know, demagogue or not. What about as a history teacher? Matthew Continetti wants to give him credit for that. Dana, how do you assess that piece? He's got the blackboard. He's got the book list. He's talking history all the time.
I think Matthew's right. I mean, there are certainly good books on that list. And he is, incidentally, a phenomenal, rivaling Oprah in his ability to put books on the bestseller list. But, you know, when he's handing out copies and touting the Cleon Skousen, the conspiracy theorist I mentioned earlier, that's where I think it gets pretty dangerous. But certainly, these Founders Fridays, yes, I think he has revised history in many ways, but it's also not harmful to have people talking about, you know, the founding of the Republic. He is, in some ways, sees himself as a modern day Thomas Paine. In fact, had a guy dress up as Thomas Paine on a show reading Beck's words.
I mean, you say not harmful, but I don't know. I mean, you've got to represent it accurately. Of course, historians debate what accuracy is, too, but you can take it off in all kinds of directions. I mean, your piece on Sunday in the Washington Post, Dana, you know, said Glenn Beck is an amateur historian, very amateur, then goes on for, I don't know, 8 or 9 pages saying he asserts this, that was BS. He asserts that was BS.
Right.
Is that valuable?
I'm saying that the recommending of authors is not, you know, and he has recommended legitimate authors as well. I mean, I think that it's not the discussion of history that's the problem. It's the when he envelops in the conspiracies and the doomsday and the threats of violence.
Here's the famous bit from Glenn Beck. It was July last year. Glenn Beck sat in with the folks at Fox News, Fox and Friends, and expressed outrage that the president would hold a beer summit between Boston policeman James Crowley, Harvard scholar Henry Louis Gates, to use it as a teaching moment. Who needs to learn what here? Beck asked, and then he went on to say that the president hates white people.
This president, I think, has exposed himself as a guy over and over and over again who has a deep-seated hatred for white people or the white culture. I don't know what it is, but you can't sit in a pew with Jeremiah Wright for 20 years and not hear some of that stuff and not have it wash over.
Matt Continetti, what about that? Was that a valuable insight for this country? Was that demagoguery? What of it?
Of course it wasn't a valuable insight, and in fact, the Fox hosts called him on it and said, "You can't honestly believe that."
So he said it. He said it on national television.
But this is an example of Beck overstepping his bounds. Just like Dana had mentioned, he crosses a line often. And so this is part of the problem of Beck. Every time he does something like that, and we all object, rightly, he goes and turns around and says, you know, we should revisit Hayek, or we should devote more time to God and country, and So I think perhaps this weaving that he does is intentional, and he understands, because of his talents as a performer, that you always need to have a reversal and in order to keep people interested. And the question is, you know, how long is he able to do that? I agree with something that Dana said earlier, that this is probably a phenomenon that will fade away. And I think it will fade away not so much if the economy improves, but when Republicans return to power. And I think what we happen is whenever the Republicans are in the wilderness, it's the entertainers that come to the fore, people like Limbaugh and Beck. And then once you actually have Republicans in power, Republican elected officials who are accountable to the entire public, not just the conservative base of the Republican Party, then you see that the entertainers go to the background again.
So are they entertainers then, or are they, you know, bamboozlers? I mean, what's the role if they come to the fore when the GOP's out of power?
I don't think they're bamboozling anybody. I mean, they deliver a product that people like, and the product can be wrong sometimes. It can be offensive at other times, and still other times it's useful and entertaining. So it's a complex product, and it's one that not everyone likes, clearly. I even have problems with a lot of it. But at the same time, you can't underestimate or you can't discount, the occasionally useful things that somebody like Glenn Beck provides to the political discussion.
A complex product. Sarah in Manchester, Connecticut. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you see, Sarah?
Well, you know, I called up initially to say, why are we devoting an hour to who? I mean, he's a pop star to me. My son and I watched him once because we wanted to get incensed, and he was just so silly. He had this little professor cap on and a pointer. I mean, he didn't even have a smart board behind him. He had a blackboard.
Yeah.
So,
old school.
You know, somebody in my generation, I think he's just kind of silly. I think that he does kind of invoke a racial, he uses that. He uses race. I think he's probably somewhat of a racist himself.
And but then, Sarah, let me ask you, is the Tea Party silly then? Is the you know, saying that President Obama hates white people silly? Is the talk of, you know, new Nazis is silly?
No, it's not. It's not. It's very serious. You know, as I sing in my generation, mm-hmm. I grew up post-civil rights. I grew up, you know, in a world that was, you know, more progressive. Now I have a neighbor down the street who's in her 80s, and she's shut in, and she grew up in the Depression, and she grew up with McCarthyism, and she spends all her time listening to Glenn Beck and getting more and more upset and more worried. And I think, you know, when I see the tea baggers and the tea partiers and their rallies, and they're so angry, and they're so, to me, that almost looks more like Nazi Germany, the chanting and the... So, yeah, I do think that whenever you get a mass group of people angry, nothing good's going to come out of it. But at the same time, if you really listen to the man, he just doesn't really seem all that intelligent. And I don't know if he would devote an hour of his programming to the power of NPR. He would.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not. Sarah, thanks for your call. Let's go to John in Clarksville, Tennessee. John, you're on.
Hey, how you doing today?
Okay, what do you see, John?
Well, I see it as kind of a detriment. I'm an ardent libertarian, and from my perspective, I think Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin do nothing but damage the movement. Prior to their entry on the scene, you had individuals who, it was kind of this nebulous concept and something I was very excited about, seeing a very involved body politic who's now being co-opted by Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin and used as a tool. Even your author today is able to write about the movement in a detrimental way due to the fact that Glenn Beck's associated with it. So I think they're doing more harm than good, and I think figures on the left or right, be they Glenn Beck or Keith Olbermann, are never going to benefit. And I think labeling things as a Nazi is kind of always an infinitely regressive stance.
So conservative libertarian, not happy to have Beck out front in your case, John.
Oh, not at all. Not at all.
So there's a thumbs down from Clarksville. Let's get another call. Fitchburg, Massachusetts. William. Thanks, John. William, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I want to echo what Sarah said. You guys have just really dropped the ball on this one. You're on a bad stage. You got to come up with better ideas than... dedicating a whole hour to this bumbling idiot. Look, I'm a bumbling idiot. I know a bumbling idiot when I see one. He's a bumbling idiot, okay? This guy, you really can't take him serious, man.
But what if he's swinging votes, William? What if he's mobilizing, American voters?
That means they're out of touch. If you look at reality and look at the facts, bro, you can't... This guy is just... creating a world that got a little bubble, and he got all these people just put in it, and he's just preaching to them, and they're feeding off this fecal matter that's coming out of his mouth. You cannot keep listening to this stuff. It's going to rot your brain.
William, we got it loud and clear. I appreciate your call. One more, Paducah, Kentucky. Don, thank you, William. Don, you're on the air.
My question is, what if he is correct? That's the biggest question, and he's been correct on a lot of things.
If he's correct,
it's non-deniable. You can't deny the things he's been correct about.
But do you think if he's correct, what, that we've got the end of the world coming? Socialism, Nazism, what?
No, socialism. He speaks out against socialism, and one of the biggest socialists ever was Father Coughlin. So why would you compare a man that speaks against socialism and compare him to a socialist?
Don, I appreciate your call as well from the road there in Paducah. Matt Continetti, you can see people are just all over the map here. Some who wonder why we're even talking about him. Another, you know, you hear the question from Paducah, what if Glenn Beck is right? What would that mean to you if he were right, Matt?
Well, that's a scary idea, because Glenn Beck's argument is that the powers that be in government are intentionally trying to collapse American economy and society so that they can remake it in their own image. And this is a place where I just, as a conservative, fundamentally disagree with Beck, because I don't think anyone is intentionally doing anything to ruin America. That's an idea that means our leaders have bad intentions in mind, and I think that's incorrect. Everyone is trying to pursue the good, and they may be wrong, and I think the Obama administration is wrong, and it may lead to perverse consequences, and I think that's what the Obama administration is doing. But I disagree with Beck to think that they're intentionally trying to collapse America. That's just, for me, a bridge too far to cross.
Dana, we've just got 20 seconds left here. You say he may be pushing America to the wall, maybe hoping or imagining it will snap. Is it going to?
I think he may be. And if people have questions about why focus on Glenn Beck, consider that in a Gallup poll, more Americans volunteered his name as the most influential person in the world, more than the Pope and more than any living ex-president. So just keep in mind how powerful this man is.
There's something to put on the blackboard and think about. Dana Milbank's new book is Tears of a Clown. It's been great having you with us today, Dana. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Tom.
Matthew Continetti's book is The Persecution of Sarah Palin, How the Elite Media Tried to Bring Down a Rising Star. Matt Continetti, thanks for being with us again here today. Always great to have you as well.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, thank you for joining us. A lot to keep an eye on out there. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.